From the Land DeGrant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the second day of September 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting in Atchison, Kansas. We'll check the agricultural weather forecast with Eric Snodgrass at Agrible from right here in Urbana-Champaign. And we'll hear Commodity Week in this hour as well. Our panelists recorded yesterday afternoon included Dan Zwicker of Zwicker Consulting, Amy Sage of the Andersons, and Aaron Curtis of Midco. Commodity Week and the Closing Market Report right here on this radio station. Stay with us or check us out online. Either way, WILLAG.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Either way, the numbers finished up in Chicago on this Friday afternoon. September corn up 5.5 cents at $3.16.5. December 3.28.5, up 4.75. September soybeans 9.5 cents higher at $9.68.5. November at $9.52.5, 8.75 higher. The soft red winter wheat up 5 cents at $3.73.25 in the September. July at $4.46.25, nickel higher. The hard red July at $4.49.25, up 6.75 cents. Live cattle futures finished the October at $101.52.5, $2.05 lower. Feeder cattle were down 220 in the October, 132.32.5, and lean hogs in the October at $60.60, down $2.72.5. Let's talk a little bit about the commodity markets now with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting in Atchison, Kansas. Mike, boy, what a strange day with the market turning higher despite some big numbers that came out from Informa.
Yeah, and you know, if you didn't look at years like 2007 and 2014 and go back and look at some of these analog years that you and I have been talking about, Todd, I think it would be quite confusing because the market really did shift from a bearish bias earlier this week once we hit first notice day and turn the monthly calendar over into that new marketing year for the row crops. But we did make a low pretty much at the exact same time back in 2007 in December corn and essentially went up into the stocks report in late September. I'm not saying that's going to happen this time, but it's worth noting because one of the big features that allowed the corn to find support in a very big crop year was a real big increase in Indian wheat imports. In fact, they came in and imported just under 7 million tons in the 2006 marketing year. We had extremely good demand in the corn. And so we do have some similarities fundamentally, I think, with what we're dealing with in the corn market right now as it pertains to the wheat and as it pertains to the corn demand. In fact, India and Egypt are both big news items this week, but you really didn't get a chance to look at much of and drill down much. But it looks as though from a standpoint of Egypt, some believe that they may not have enough wheat stocks to get them past November. And in India, one of the big flour millers over there said that the situation was very serious and that they thought that they'd have to take off their 25% import tariff, and that may be abolished, and maybe 4 to 6 million tons of wheat may be needed to be imported into India. So that's probably the biggest thing coming back from the holiday. Why I'm talking about it is if we're going to get a trend higher in corn as we start to shell, it's probably going to have to come out there.
Yeah, so this would be news that would be welcome in the United States, I suppose, because there is an awful lot of wheat on the market. The price of wheat across the United States really, really low, putting pressure in the marketplace for end users, cattle producers, I suppose, in particular, to feed wheat as opposed to, and dairy, as opposed to feeding corn. Is there enough of an export market for U.S. wheat that this could really change things at all?
I think so. I think the quality is there. And you bring up a huge point about the wheat-corn spread. It got down to below 57 cents this week in the soft red. And so you're right. Wheat is a feed grain if you look at the lead month SEP-SEP spread right now. But before the rally on Thursday, Todd, we were in the United States soft red wheat Gulf market $20 below the price of Ukrainian wheat, and we were $40 below the price of French wheat coming out of Rhone, France. So, yes, I think we are there as far as being able to attract demand, because that more than compensates, given the quality and the shipping, that more than compensates for anything. The big feature that I saw this week was when Egypt came out and raised that ergot fungus requirement. That just flags the market that says Egypt's got problems. That's a demand barrier. Either they don't know what they need, or they don't have the money to buy it, or they don't have the letters of credit. And you've got this huge corruption scandal with wheat and the subsidy program right in the center of it that's been going on for several months now. And so when they saw that fungus requirement come back and then Egypt canceled the tender for the second time, it just reinforced the idea, well, if we can't get wheat sold at this cheap a price, corn and beans have no chance either. And so that's why I think that almost all roads to a low are getting to the point where it leads to the wheat making a low first. I will say one caveat is that the beans and the crude oil continue to have a very strong positive relationship with one another. And up until today's 3% gain in the crude oil, we were down 10% heading into this morning in the crude oil. And I think that was a big weight in the soy complex.
Well, so I want to talk about that a little bit too. But just bear with me for a second, because the Informa numbers were out during the trade today, 174.8 bushels to the acre. Their August number was 169.8. 174.8, not very far off, I suppose, the 175.1 USDA is at. 49.5 is what they're saying for soybeans. Informa's former number for that was at 47.7. Did they really have much of an impact during the trade at all?
No, I don't think they did. I mean, I think they kept the highs in place. We couldn't make new highs going into the close. Their production number was what was most troubling to me. As you say, the yield numbers didn't look a lot different, but they went up to 15.3 billion on corn production and 4.13 on bean production. And if you drill that down into the August numbers from USDA, you're talking about over a 2.5 billion bushel corn carryover and about a 370 bean carryover. So no, I don't think the trade really looked at that in detail today. They had other business to attend to, because those are pretty negative numbers.
Yeah, they were very negative numbers. Here we are, though, despite that fact, we had higher both corn and soybean numbers, as long with wheat for the day. Labor Day weekend, just setting a pace so we can change trend on Tuesday?
I hope so. I mean, that's where the wheat comes in, and we actually had a positive week in the December corn, up over 1%, and that was in large part too, I think, the coming back around in the wheat market and being able to trade some of the pro farmer numbers. I think the trade was about a week behind. The Egyptian issue kept the market center and focus on the demand side. I guess going forward here after the holiday, Todd, I'd say I'm using the Bloomberg Grain Commodity Index because it's been a very good indicator for me. It's still below on today's close on a weekly basis, still below its early August low. If we would be able to get that move back above the August lows and retake those August lows, I think that would be a very strong technical indication that we've taken prices low enough. I found it very interesting that while November beans stayed below its August 12th report day low, we did see Dease corn regain that and get above that today on a closing basis. So all eyes for me are on the wheat and to a lesser degree the crude oil. Once I get those two things running in the right direction, I think we could have some good technical lows put in place.
Thanks so much for taking the time with me today. We'll talk with you in 1 week.
A happy and blessed Labor Day to you, sir, and everybody out there listening.
Mike Zuzalo is with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Atchison, Kansas. You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Friday afternoon. Eric Snodgrass joins us. He's with Agrible, but traveling today in Nebraska. Thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule. I want to know a little bit about the hurricane, now Tropical Storm Hermine. What do we know about this and the impact on agriculture?
Yeah, the impact on agriculture is really going to be centered on the cotton market, the cotton belt down there. And that's because, you know, Hermine, we've been watching for about 12, 13, 14 days, I think now, finally got into the Gulf of Mexico, used that warm water to really strengthen. And then it got up to Category 1 strength hurricane status before hitting Florida. Now that it's got on land, it's moving fast, but it's dropping a lot of rain. We're expecting better than 3 to 5 inches of rain in some places more, kind of up through the Carolinas. And then got to watch it closely because it might be heading up toward like the New York City area, the remnants of this, where it could possibly re-strengthen and cause quite a bit of problems up there, mainly with rain. But, you know, it's something to be watching this time of year. You know, we've got these systems that are coming out of the Gulf, and they can move up toward us, too. So watching it close now.
We'll keep an eye on it, but for the meantime, I suppose the East Coast is a little gloomier, but here in the Midwest should be a beautiful Labor Day weekend.
Oh, yeah. We had this cold front come through, knock the humidity out, knock the heat out, and we're looking at a nice stretch of cooler days, probably lasting all the way through Monday. But, you know, something is building in. We were watching the flow of the jet stream and saw a ridge that was kind of moving back over the center part of the country, and that's going to reintroduce some heat for us. But, you know, the good news is, I looked out a little bit longer term and was kind of paying attention to how the flow of that jet stream looks maybe toward middle September. We see another pretty broad-scale trough that's coming through to knock our temperatures down again. And we should expect that, right? We're heading toward fall, you know, we should expect these events. But after such a hot summer, you know, it's kind of nice to get some relief. But we do stay dry. We're going to stay dry maybe until next Thursday. That's about the next time I see some big precipitation coming through. But with that trough, that one I'm talking about now that's several days away from us, it could bring back in some wetter weather. But still, we're a little bit ahead of harvest, so it shouldn't have too big of an impact at this point.
Last winter, when we were talking about El Nino, that transition to La Nina told us we might have some problems in the Midwest. That certainly did not show up. However, if I recall correctly, the correlation to South America is much greater. Do we have any more idea today than we did then?
Yeah, we do. One of the things we've been monitoring over the last couple of months is that the strength of the developing La Nina is now forecast to be weaker than it was. And that's important because typically La Nina really knocks back yields in South America. Basically, it produces quite a bit of drought conditions in the southern growing regions and typically wet in the northern. But with a weaker La Nina, some of the implications of that is possibly having a halfway decent year for yields out of South America, especially Brazil. Argentina may deal with some heat and some dryness, but most of Brazil may be in okay shape. You know, around here, we kind of just give the long-range projections. We're probably going to see a return toward an average, potentially a cooler-than-average winter for the Midwest. And we're seeing a pretty active storm track that might set up. It goes across the Ohio River Valley. That may mean some more snow. Now, granted, this is quite a long ways off in the forecast, and these are kind of our early projections. But you know what's funny? Even if it just returned to average this winter compared to last winter, it'll feel really cold, given how warm it was last year. So, yeah, that's what La Nina can do to you.
Well, thanks for the heads up on that one. We appreciate you taking the time with us today, Eric.
Yeah, thank you.
Eric Snodgrass is with Agrible from right here in Urbana-Champaign, traveling this week in Nebraska. Thanks to him for joining us on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report.